All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Hello, everybody. Dave Hodges here, host of the CommonSenseShow.tv. Thank you so much for joining us, censorship-free, commercial-free. And you can see that this is the Doug and Dave Intel Report. And we have our old friend, Timothy Alberino, with us. And so you kind of have an idea of what we're going to talk about. Three letters, UFOs. And we'll also get into other things as well, too, that are related to that. And we're happy to have Tim here. We looked like we were headed straight into disclosure here a few months ago. And it seems like everything stopped. Tim, what's your take? Why didn't we get full disclosure like we thought we were going to?
Well, that's a good description of what seems to have happened. I feel like the Pentagon was chasing the phenomenon, trying to get a hold of the narrative, and they caught up to it. And so now they've got the narrative tamped down. And that includes what Congress is doing, and I never expected a full disclosure, a full throated disclosure of the alien presence from the government. Not anytime soon, anyway. But what was coming out of the Pentagon was remarkable. But it's sort of like they turned the faucet off, and now they're trying to walk some of it back. But it's too late for that. The cat's out of the bag, and. And so now I think they're going to pretend like the extraordinary claims and data that was released really was much more prosaic than we were thinking. And really the only one I see continuing to talk about this besides the UFO community, UFO Twitter and the like, is Tucker Carlson.
Yes.
And so, like I said, the cat's out of the bag. But I feel like the Pentagon has caught up to the phenomenon they've gotten in terms of, you know, things sort of broke loose with that New York Times article in 2017, the Nimitz incident. But they've caught up. They're now in control of the narrative again, and they're doing what they always do, which is to obfuscate.
Well, here's what bothers me. They use the phrase threat to national security, quote unquote. This was the Pentagon. This was the DOD. I mean, there's no taking back what they said.
No.
So there's a threat to me that says our lives are in danger. Our continued existence as a species could be in danger. Certainly our civilization could be in danger, although we're doing a pretty good job of doing that on our own. But to me, it's self-explanatory, Tim.
It is. And you know what may have happened, and this is just speculation. But maybe the guys at the Pentagon who were feeling like, you know, it's time to be honest about some of this and go with some of the leaks and so forth. Maybe the guys from the, you know, those are maybe the guys you can call them the deep state at the Pentagon. But maybe the guys from the dumb state got a hold of them and told them that it's time to put the lid on this. And what I mean is the dumb state being, of course, the deep underground military bases where the knowledge of UFOs is really harbored. And certainly the technology and the all of the reverse engineering and all of that is way over the head, way above the pay grade of 99% of the people that work at the Pentagon.
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing to consider is that with governmental disclosure of top secret SCI files, if I'm correct, the National Archives, after everything's filed, they have a duty to then release these files if it doesn't have any pertinence to national security after 20 to 30 years. So, you know, every about 20 years, we get to learn something that happened 20 years ago, and then we get, you know, 2 years of talking points out of it. But what's interesting is that that's not what happened. Instead, we're learning about stuff that happened mid-2000s. So that's already kind of breaking the normalities of when you're filing classified information. Why did you release it before its actual, you know, end of date service before it should be normally released to the public. I feel like you get a trickle effect every now and then from the government. Here's a little bit of information. We turn the faucet on, we turn it off, then we turn the faucet on again, get you a a little bit into the groove of the alien UFO phenomena, and then they cut it off. And then out of nowhere, Tim, they release the liquid, you know, all the soft tissue damage stuff that the Pentagon released. All right. The unexplained bursts. The amount of sightings where people had, radiation burns. And then they say, now we think that UFOs are a threat because of Nimitz and all this other stuff.
Well, the one thing that they did very, very successfully, and it irritates the heck out of me. I follow UFO Twitter, and it's very irritating that everyone has adopted the new term, the UAPs.
Yeah.
And that drives me crazy. Don't let them give us new terms. We're talking about UFOs. We're talking about the phenomenon that they've been covering up all these decades. And everybody's just going with this new term and allowing the government to sort of twist the narrative as if it's some mystical, mysterious thing that they're just curious about. That's what the effect of changing that term, I believe, is accomplishing. And it drives me crazy that all these UFO people who've been following the topic have adopted this new terminology. I absolutely detest it. That's why I do not refer to UFOs as UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. Because
so what's the purpose for changing the name, do you think?
I think it's ambiguity. It's ambiguity. A UFO is an alien craft. That's what it is in everybody's mind. When you say UFO, nobody thinks the Russians, nobody thinks the Chinese. Everybody thinks gray aliens or something, some other kind of alien being. UFOs are inextricably linked to extraterrestrial entities. But a UAP is like a big question mark. It might be some kind of a metaphysical thing or whatever. I mean, it's just sort of – It casts a shadow of ambiguity over something that is crystal clear to so many of us.
Let me give you my thought on that, because I think you're right, because it went from unidentified flying object, which was a military term. That was military terminology. And then it went to unidentified aerial phenomena. When you add in the phenomena, which is something that the U.S. government does not research openly, but they do it all the time, right? But they don't openly come out and talk about phenomena as in we're following and tracking something militarily. Why is it not unidentified aerial threat? Why is it not unidentified aerial vehicle? Why did they put phenomena?
Because it's just a big question mark. It's ambiguous. It can be anything. It leaves the door open for it to be anything. But a UFO. And, you know, you can make the argument, well, UFO is just an unidentified flying object, but not in the minds of the masses. In the minds of the masses, a UFO is an extraterrestrial spacecraft. And so that's just, they had to change the terminology. These are the kind of games that the government plays all the time. And these little subtle things, it's amazing what I've seen. And now, if you follow UFO, with the so-called UFO Twitter like I do, you'll see the effect that this has had. The conversation is different now. The conversation about unidentified aerial phenomenon is different in some respects to the conversation about UFOs.
And is it the alien factor that's different?
Yes, it's shifting away from and I talked to Richard Dolan about this, I think we both concur that there's been a shift in the UFO community, and this is the secular UFO community. There's been a shift away from the idea that what we're dealing with is physical and potentially extraterrestrial hardware towards something that's much more nebulous, something that's much more difficult to define. And, you know, you throw in terms like interdimensional, which I do subscribe to the idea that there are elements of interdimensionality involved here. But But by changing that term, they shifted the conversation effectively. And it is amazing to me how good they are at doing this. And that might, maybe that was the purpose of, maybe that was part of their strategy and getting hold of this and getting hold of this, these leaks and all of the news that the phenomenon was getting a couple years ago. Maybe part of the strategy was to make sure that if we're going to talk about UFOs, if we have to talk about them, let's talk about them on our terms. Let's right. not talk about them using the zeitgeist of the 21st century. Everybody knows what a UFO is. We've all seen the movies. We all have heard the stories, and so many of us have seen the craft. So if you just shift that term, it, like I said, it casts a shade of ambiguity over the subject. And again, it, as you can tell, it drives me nuts because it's effective.
Have you ever heard of Project Aquiline?
No.
Project Aquiline started, I believe, in 1968 when we first started to build drones. And the idea was to build an aircraft that was in the shape, at least by radar, of a bird. And it was used for intelligence gathering. And the top secret level of this was for Aquiline staff only. No one else could know anything about it. And you were only allowed access to the project from the Joint Chiefs and up, and then the Aquiline staff. Now, you may ask, who started the project? The CIA started the project. So there's an interesting theme here. Between the 1940s to present day, the CIA has held captive the UFO threat. It was the CIA and then the Air Force. And I think in a lot of ways with the UAP is that you may see an introduction of craft soon that they say what you have been seeing, the TR-3B Mantas and some of these other objects, this is actually our technology. And here is some of the documents that shows kind of like a chain of custody for how many different decades that we've been working on these projects.
Also, keep in mind, if you are ostensibly investigating something, so now we have this committee in Congress who's supposedly looking into this, Congresswoman Gildebrandt is one of the people, one of the most outspoken and prominent people on this panel. If you have the appearance of investigation, what it does is it pacifies the masses, because mm-hmm. then you feel like, okay, they're doing an investigation. Okay, good. We're going to get some information. There's going to be reports. But I think this is a very clever, I wouldn't call it a ruse, but it's, I don't think it's what people think. It definitely solidifies the UFO phenomenon as 100% real, for sure. That's, like I said, the cat's out of the bag on that one. But now it allows them to give the appearance that they're investigating. And sometimes an investigation like that is the worst thing that can happen, mm-hmm. because then the information is going to be completely controlled.
Compartmentalized.
And the news organizations are just going to parrot whatever this committee wants them to. And as you said, the CIA and the NSA is involved in this. All of our major intelligence operations are now involved in the UFO question, but it did start with the Air Force. I never expected much out of this committee, out of Congress. And although I did mark how significant it is now that the admittance is open and frank. And that is that's something that, you know, like we were talking about earlier, that step has been taken, and they're not going to be able to walk that back.
Well, two things. For one thing, I don't like the fact that they started a law enforcement branch, even if it is just OSI or some sort of an investigative service. I don't like the fact that they started a law enforcement branch, that they put a badge and gun to somebody to go and ask questions, because it's reminiscent of Blue Book all over again. And what really happened with that was a lot of people were threatened by the United States Air Force.
Faux investigation, too.
That's right. So here's the other thing is if we remain quiet on the UFO threat, that they call the threat, all the information that we have, what is stopping Russia from disclosing it? Because Vladimir Putin has talked about UFOs before.
I don't know that it's in the interest of any nation to talk about it. It may be that some of these nations have been hiding what they know from the U.S. government, from the CIA, from the U.S. Air Force, and they don't want to show their hand either. I'm sure even that the Peruvian Air Force has recovered craft, downed craft. I'm sure Russia has, and China. And so are they communicating? Is there some sort of an agreement behind the scenes that nobody's really going to come forth with all this? Although Mexico, the former president of Mexico did attempt to release some data. And long before the New York Times article, too.
Yeah, through that guy, Jaime, yep. What was his name? But you know what I'm talking about, the Mexican researcher?
Yeah.
Was that government-sponsored to do that?
I think it was maybe behind the curtain. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I know who you're talking about, Jaime. I can't remember his name. But I don't know if it was directly government. But I believe, if I remember correctly, if my memory serves me, it was a statement that was put out by the Mexican Air Force to the effect that the phenomenon is real and we've captured it on our cameras, on our airplanes. And so I could be wrong. It was something like that. But because it was coming out of Mexico, you know, it from Americans got to hear it from the horse's mouth. We have to hear it from our government. And we did. And now it's just amazing. It's just amazing to watch how that what's unfolded in the last few years has kind of pacified people rather than people being up in arms saying, you know, hold on a minute, and starting to reverse engineer this in their minds, which is what they should do, because, you know, okay, so the phenomenon is real. Now, okay, down crafts. Tucker Carlson was starting to get into that a little bit. I think he's going to continue to push that. What about recovered hardware? And then furthermore, what about abductions? What about alien abductions? And that is the path, believe me, those two issues. The government does not and will not allow conversation around those. That's why they changed the terminology. Unidentified aerial phenomena. Let's focus on the aerial phenomena, everybody. Let's not talk about crash retrievals, and let's not talk about abductions.
Well, why wouldn't they talk about abductions? If the Pentagon comes out with admitting of abductions, admitting of fetuses being stolen, as I think that's their terminology, being removed from women, or, you know, sperm samples, you know, these very very aggressive acts that have happened to people who have been abducted. Why would they come out and say that then?
Because it implicates them in a cover-up. Again, unidentified aerial phenomena. We had a task force, you know, the government can say, we were studying it. You know, and we had, yeah, we were studying. We are concerned about unidentified aerial phenomena. Let's keep the conversation on that level. Believe me, that is what they desperately want to control the narrative. They do not want to talk about alien abductions because they are implicated in a massive cover up if they do.
Because
they've known about it.
Yeah, I was going to say because of the secret agreements made with Truman and Eisenhower.
Well, and also simply because they've known about it and they never warned anyone.
Okay.
Never told anybody that it was happening. And they allowed people who were coming forward to talk about it to be absolutely mocked and ridiculed. And the government is completely complicit in the abduction. And to your point, Dave, specifically if that agreement, the Grieta Treaty, is real. And Eisenhower actually signed an agreement with the Greys. And the jury's out on that. We don't have any definitive proof one way or the other. But believe me, that do not want to talk about, because remember, this will open up a can of worms. Then you're going to have to talk about underground bases.
Well, yeah, you start, I mean, getting FOIA requests for it then.
Exactly. And so right now, abductions and reverse engineered alien technology is still in the realm of fantasy. What the government has admitted is that UFOs are real, which is huge, which is massive. The controversy is over, absolutely. But now they want to talk about unidentified aerial phenomenon. And I don't understand why everybody's letting him get away with that.
Have you seen David Politis? He has a new documentary out, Missing 411 with a UFO abduction connection.
I didn't see the documentary, but I'm familiar with his work.
I've watched it twice so far. It's pretty compelling. In his documentary, they seem to be all within like a triangulated area. There's like a hotbed of this area where these men mainly are being abducted. And I just wonder, do we have more of this abduction story in the national parks than we do at people's homes?
Well, I have to say that the national park abduction scenarios are very, it's a different animal than the typical alien abduction. Typical alien abduction, you're taken from usually your home, usually your bed, not always, oftentimes from your car while it's moving, or you're instructed, you are telepathically instructed to pull over, and you do so because you're under the alien's control if they're abducting you. And you're typically taken from your bedroom, let's say, and you go through the abduction procedures, and then you're returned. And they try to put you back the way they took you so that you're not suspicious. They don't want to draw attention to their program. So they try and put you back. Sometimes they mess up. Sometimes your shirt's on backwards or somebody else's shirt is on you or you don't have any clothes on at all. But you're always put back. The aliens always put you back. What's going on in the national parks, like I said, seems to be a different animal altogether. I don't know that we can draw a correlation between the gray abduction program and the missing persons phenomenon in the national parks. I have no idea what's going on there.
There's a lot of reports, and I've actually been able to read a few of them. There are reports out there where people see the strange lights in the sky where a lot of hunters who are out there backpacking by themselves or sometimes in teams and then split up to chase game. They are abducted, but they're almost always found in an area, and it seems to be an area that search and recovery has already searched two or three times, and then poof, here's this guy. So one of the guys,
alive, correct?
Alive.
If they're being put back alive, because a lot of the stories I've read is that the people disappear indefinitely.
Yeah, and here's a mixed priority. Okay, so sometimes they don't come back. Okay, sometimes you're just lost in the void of a forest, and that can happen. Predatory animals can get you very fast as well.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you die from exposure. You may have been put back alive, but, depending on what's going on, you may die from exposure.
But I don't think the grays would put you back where you're going to die. That's not what they're doing. They're not. They don't want you dead. That defeats the purpose of the abduction program. So, they abduct you from the time you're a toddler until you're into old age.
What's strange about this, and you and I have talked about abductions very deeply, all right? So I want your opinion on this, because I think you're one of the experts in the field for the abduction phenomena. And it's that this one guy, he claims to have been abducted. They come, they take his semen, they try to tell him, all these different ways that, he can save the world. And then they poof, put him back into a similar area. He's kind of like in a canyon. And then he goes out and he, does nothing with the information. Why would they tell a random person walking in the woods, this is how you save the planet, X, Y, and Z? Why would they even care?
Well, that's very common to an abduction scenario, actually. Abductees are often communicated messages that what we're doing with you is important for the future, as if there's some impending doom coming and they're going to have a role to play. And this is all part, in my opinion, of the screen memory complex. In other words, they're masking what they're doing to you.
Right.
And so oftentimes, they don't want you to be afraid. They don't want you to freak out. They don't want you to be aggressive. They don't want you to be hostile. They want you to be pliable and pacified. And so they'll tell you whatever you need to hear or whatever they think you need to hear to pacify you. And so abductees are meant to feel like they're special, like they're part of this secret program that's that's going to has something to do with saving the earth, or that there's a change that's going to happen and they're going to be part of this. And maybe there's some truth to that. Maybe the abductees are being trained for something. It wouldn't surprise me at all. In fact, I think.
Well, what's your guess if that's the case? What would they be trained for?
Well, David Jacobs talks a lot about how it so many of the abductees seem to describe almost like a crowd control situation or a rescue operations. Some abductees have claimed that they're being taught to fly the craft. I don't know. This will kind of open a field of conversation here, but there is the possibility, and I don't know if I talked about this in my book. It might be in a footnote. I didn't want to address this in the book because it seemed distractionary. There is the possibility that we are facing some kind of a natural disaster, not man-made climate change, something much worse, something and a real existential threat.
Like a pole shift or a Yellowstone.
Like a pole shift or some sort of solar phenomenon or a comet impact, something on the order on that order of magnitude that would absolutely rock the earth. And there seem to be indications of this, like maybe that's why there's so many deep underground military bases. Maybe that's why the government doesn't seem to care about spending us into oblivion. And when I say the government, I mean the deep elements of the government. Maybe the whole climate change thing is a cover for this other thing that's happening or that's coming. You know, Tom Horn talks about Apophis, the asteroid Apophis that he believes is going to hit the Earth between, I think, 2025 and 2029, I think somewhere in that time frame. But other people are saying that we are in the beginning of a polar shift. Other people are saying that we're in this 12,000-year cycle with the sun, where the sun is going to eject some kind of a massive solar flare event. There's all kinds of different ideas out there. In fact, I talk a lot about these days, a lot about the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis that, 12,000 years ago, the earth was destroyed. The earth was rocked by this cataclysmic event that was catalyzed by comet impact, by fragments of a comet that broke up in our atmosphere, or we pass through the debris field of an asteroid. Now, some people, like Graham Hancock, seem to think that we're due to pass through that debris field again in the very near future. And when we do, that we might experience some more impact events from the same debris field. So there's all these ideas, and I don't necessarily subscribe to any of them specifically. But I do get the sense that something like that might be true. And if it is, then it sets up a scenario which does fit into the scenarios I put forth in my book, Birthright, regarding what I think is going to unfold with the aliens. A scenario in which we are facing some kind of a cataclysmic apocalypse. And we are helped somehow. We are given aid by extraterrestrial entities. And I think I do put a footnote actually in my book, because if that certain scenario does unfold, it would most likely be the blonde-haired, blue-eyed humanoid ones, the ones that we look like, that are sometimes called the Nordics or the Palladians. It seems to me that they would be the ones to step in and save us from this impending doom. I think they're going to save us from the Greys. But it's hard for me to imagine the Greys saving us from something. But maybe that's another scenario that could unfold. And they can say, for example, we've been making clones, or we've been preserving the human genetic code, human DNA. We've been you know, sort of like a Noah's Ark and preserving the human species and making sure that the human species is hybridized with us so that it can survive the aftermath of the cataclysm that's coming. I mean, you could imagine a scenario like that unfolding, and that would cast the Greys in sort of the heroic light. They would play the part of the hero in that scenario, which is difficult for me to imagine, but it's not beyond possibility. So,
Tim, one of the things I was wondering, and I don't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead, no, please.
But I was thinking along the lines of, you said there's reports of training humans to fly craft and so forth. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they're not training a fifth column force to invade.
Maybe they
Earth.
Are. Maybe they are.
I immediately thought like MK Ultra. You fracture someone's mind enough and then give them some sort of a stimulus, and then everybody, you know, hop twos to whatever they're being told to do. And we've done it before in the government. It's capable. I don't know.
Well, the Greys are much more capable of something like that than the government too.
Do you think the infrastructure, like 5G or any of that stuff, could play any mind to it?
It's interesting.
I don't know. See, here's the question. There are so many different avenues here of thought, but are we being terraformed right now?
Yes.
Are we beginning to undergo some form of terraforming, some kind of terraforming in preparation for an extinction level event that's going to render the planet basically open to whoever comes in next, meaning the Greys? Or are they terraforming the Earth and messing with our atmosphere and messing with, you know, the geological aspects of the Earth and creating the cataclysm, creating the problem? There are just so many different possibilities that you could consider.
So let me give you a hypothetical, and this is just my belief. The way I view these things is that I think you have the I think there's a possibility that the Greys and the aliens that we talk about, and I think you mentioned this in your book as well, and chime in anytime you feel like, is that there is a fallen angel level of this. And in some ways, I kind of think that if there was another hybrid civilization, that the fallen angels took whatever survivors were left, moved them off planet somewhere. And that might be a visitation from the craft and technology, because, I mean, if angels taught warfare, they taught medicine, they taught art, they taught literature, they taught all these different things, which, you know, some experts speculate they did. Well, then how can we not know they didn't teach metallurgy and other different types of mechanics or fabrication?
Well, you know, taking humans off planet somewhere else, that's very much like the plot line in the Stargate TV series, which... By the way, since our last conversation, I think, Dave, you were talking about it.
Yes.
Now I've been watching them, and my kids are obsessed with them. They watch them every evening. And so it's interesting. It's interesting now that I've never watched them before. And now that I'm watching that TV series, there's a lot of episodes, too. Now that I'm watching that TV series, it's a very intriguing plot line, except for the alien creatures that are, you know, that are inhabiting the guts of these people. That's the only part I find extremely
parasitical, right?
Yeah. The parasitical element is a bit weird. But other than that, the idea that, you know, some humans were taken off of Earth in the ancient times, ancient Egyptians, and, you know, the different cultures, and have continued the progress of their civilization somewhere else. But effectively those would be human beings. Extraterrestrial human beings is what they would amount to.
Yes, that's right.
And so, is that in play? Who knows? I mean,
who knows what you know? Radiation off world could do to a body over a period of generations and generations, along with whatever new type of substance that you're eating, or maybe having to be pharmaceutically enhanced to survive an environment that could, you know, otherworldly change you possibly. You know, I just look at it because I think in a lot of ways, the great deception is the aliens coming back and being the saviors. And I think like there's no way we're going to accept you if you're the creepy, scary insectolins or the grays that have been, you know, probing and kidnapping everybody. But if you come back looking more like us, people are naive enough to say, oh, well, they're really nice. They must be telling the truth.
Well, you do have the hybrids that are integrating into human society gradually. So there's that element of the grays. Maybe the grays never intend to make themselves known. Maybe they only intend to control humanity through their hybrid proxies. And that seems to me to be a very effective way to gain control of the planet without destroying its resources, or dare I say its workforce, its cattle being us, its biological resource being us. I mean, you know, if you want to maintain the stock without and the planet itself, doing this subversive, surreptitious integration of your hybrids into human society. Your hybrids are fully controlled by you and loyal to you, and they have no choice, really. That seems to be a very ingenious way to go about that. And in fact, to some extent, the scariest proposition of all. How long? Let's assume that, you know, that David Jacobs was correct years ago. It was 5, 6, 7 years ago now, when he released his last published work, that the integration process, the abduction program, the purpose of which is to create alien human hybrids that are indistinguishable from us, but that are still alien and maintain the powerful telepathic capabilities of the grays or the insectolins, and if those beings were integrating into society, let's say 7 years ago, and the most basic level, learning how to operate a refrigerator, learning how to operate a television, learning how to operate an automobile, learning what to do in a department store, you know, and they're connected to their what Jacobs calls their personal project hybrid. In other words, the abductee is connected to a personal project hybrid who they have to sort of escort through these different learning scenarios and teach them about life on Earth. Well, what if 7 years ago they were learning to check out with an item at Walmart, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning with their personal project, with their abductee? Well, 7 years down the line, how long is it going to be now before they're running for office? How long is it going to be before they're working their way up the military ranks? How long is it going to be before they're becoming the CEOs of major industries, of major companies in huge industries, like, you know, the energy industry or the entertainment industry? Okay. Is that the end goal? I mean, is the end goal to take over, to control the powers, the levers of power in human society, gradually working these hybrids up through society? That would mean that they would have to live a relatively normal life on Earth, which when Jacobs was completing his work, publishing his last book, they were not anywhere close to living a normal life on Earth. They were these hybrid entities are very abnormal. They're not like us. They're trying to pretend to be like us, but they're not like us. They are, well, the scariest thing, which I always tell people, according to the data, is that they are lacking in empathy. They have no empathy. God, they're vicious beings.
Well, go ahead, Doug.
So my question is, you talk about viciousness, and I'm going to bring up a sensitive topic, but I think you may get onto this with it. Davos, WEF. All the world leaders meeting right now. This is the largest accumulation of world leaders to meet at Davos in history. They just released, Klaus Schwab's WEF just released that they want age gap love and to decriminalize pedophilia on an international scale. And it's all part of a depopulation theory. Too many people on Earth. And if you have child brides, then there'll be less families, most likely. obviously, right? Could there be an element of a very sinister plot like that? I mean, because, you know, it's
well, it is a sinister plot on its own face. I mean, just on the face of it, the normalization of abomination is in and of itself a sinister plot. They're normalizing abominable sin. They're making it passé. They're making it acceptable in society, mm-hmm. so that evil people can operate out in the open with impunity. And they're creating a society that is completely and utterly reprobate. And that is a very frightening situation, I think, that's developing. I mean, when you talk about normalizing pedophilia, it's hard to imagine anything worse besides maybe normalizing murder. And that would be like the only thing I can think of. That would be the only thing left for them to normalize. If they can, they already normalize infanticide. They already
They're doing euthanasia. That's
euthanasia. That's right. Yeah. And just in Congress, all the Democrats voted against that bill. Was it today? That protects the life of a baby born in a botched. Every Democrat voted against it. In other words, no, don't save the baby's life. Let it die. So that's infanticide, period. And so you have, go ahead.
Okay. So we're normalizing sin. Okay. We're normalizing sin now. We're calling good evil and evil good. Let's go ahead and say we're in that reality now as a people. We are a fractured minded people. Every city and every state and every country is now a reflection of Babylon. And in comes
Gomorrah.
Yeah, right. In comes a guy who says, let's say, who gets to running for election for president and comes out and says, I am a hybrid alien human. What do you think the possibility of that ever is?
I don't. That would destroy their. That would. That would defeat the covert nature of their operation.
Well, what if they don't have to be covert anymore? People are so fractured. We believe almost to the point that bestiality is okay.
Yeah, but I think that would freak people out. I mean, you're talking about then like I think a lot of people of every political persuasion would think, my God, are we being taken over by an alien species? What you have in society is very simply, you have, Jesus said, all those who hate me love death. Jesus said that the light came into the world and this is the judgment on mankind, that they loved the darkness. And that is what we are seeing manifesting. We are seeing the manifest allegiance to the darkness, to sin. We are seeing what the Bible calls a reprobate mind. And that is judgment. God turns a nation over to a reprobate mind as an act of judgment. And in fact, homosexuality is also, rampant homosexuality is also a judgment. And when basically God makes the men of a nation weak, and then that nation collapses. And that is what we're seeing. So I'm not sure that the reprobate mind that we're witnessing, not just in America, but all over the world, especially in Europe and Australia and Canada, all over the world, this reprobate mind that we're seeing, I'm not sure that it is directly associated to anything associated with the activity of the grace. Certainly, it's associated with the activity of the devil and of a demonic influence that is saturating the social political climate of these Western nations. And so, but I don't know. I don't know that I can draw a correlation directly to the grace.
Let me tell you what I would I'll just throw this out here for you guys to critique this. As you're talking, I reflected in a lot of different ways. One was the 1996 movie with Charlie Sheen, The Arrival. And you mentioned, Tim, about the integration of hybrids. In this case, it was human imposters coming from an alien species transformed by a machine. And we had the head of NASA being one of them, a couple people in government in the movie. So the integration factor was answered in that movie from that perspective. And I think that that would be a natural expectation, that if you want to control a society, and I think control is their goal, you would have to start with the power structure. But I'm even going to go a little more radical with you, and this won't surprise Doug based on our past discussions. But what I am wondering here is, what if singularity in transhumanism, what if it's not man and machine necessarily? Machine is a transitory a way to get to the final destination. What if the singularity is between man and alien, and the purpose is to oppose God? Both are not of Christ. And therefore, I'll go a step further. You're wondering if a deal has not been made with the descendants of the fallen angels, and we've discussed possible, you know, different DNA from that line coming from Genesis 6. What if a deal's been made to promulgate that, then everybody else is hand-selected by this group to serve, and they get great riches and so forth, and they're bought off for their compliance. And they're told at these world conferences, you will survive, but for us to move forward, humanity has to be sacrificed. I'm just giving you a scenario.
It's very plausible.
That might be science fiction. So go ahead,
guys. It sounds very plausible to me. And I would say that, you know, that the idea that I just lost the second point you made.
With regard to the deal made between the descendants of fallen angels?
No, before that.
The singularity between aliens
and humans.
Yes,
there it is. That is actually part of the premise in one of the premises in my book regarding the alien presence, and that transhumanism, it has a destination. So because transhumanism, it means it's a term that conveys a transition. So you're transitioning from human to non-human, post-human. And what I believe is going to happen is exactly what you said, that we're not just going to be, we're not shooting in the dark. There's a goal is going to present itself. That's not the best way to say it. An objective is going to present itself in terms of what we're aiming at in this transition. And that, I believe, will happen in the form of these extraterrestrial entities who I call the elder race, this angelic race, but the apostate fallen aspect, the fallen faction of that race is going to present themselves or their hybrid offspring or both to the world and inform us that we can become like them. See, then that gives us a trajectory, that gives us a goal, that gives us the object of transhumanism is to transform us into them, to become specifically like them, rather than just in the abstract, we're going to become, you know, we're going to merge with machines and life extension. No, this is going to narrow the focus on, no, we're going to become like them.
Like Nimrod becoming a gibberine?
Well, yeah, I mean, imagine if, you know, and I do present this scenario in my book, imagine if we are confronted with an open conflict with the grays. Let's say, here's a scenario. Let's say that we do realize that the grays are integrating into society. Let's say that maybe even aspects of our military already know this, and they're actively looking for these entities, and maybe some factions are working with them to help accomplish this plan with exactly what you just said, Dave, that there's some kind of a deal struck behind the scenes that we have to wipe out most of humanity, but you guys will remain and you're going to get life extension technologies or whatever. But if we do realize that the grays are a clear and present danger, which is the narrative coming out of the government, even though that narrative is being tightly controlled right now, that is the direction of the, that is the tone that's coming out of the Pentagon, a national security threat and non-human, a non-human national security threat. So we're confronted with this alien threat, the likes of which we have no defense against this. Even our reverse engineered technology isn't going to be able to match the original technology that the grays are operating. And so we're faced with this scenario, very much like that that cataclysm scenario, where it's like an extinction level event scenario, or at least at the very least, an enslavement to this extraterrestrial faction that's taking us over surreptitiously through hybrids. And suddenly, in our hour of need, these beautiful, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, fair-skinned beings show up to help us fight against the grays.
Great deception. Great deception.
Exactly. And remember, referencing that Eisenhower lore, that create a contract scenario, do you remember that in that story, there is the grays were one faction, but there was another faction that was contacting the U.S. government. Do you remember that? And that faction was a benevolent, quote unquote, benevolent, highly advanced, spiritually advanced, benevolent faction that was warning us about the grays. That's part of that lore of that Eisenhower thing. They were warning us about the grays, not to get involved with the grays.
Yeah, exactly.
But they were not willing to work directly with us, meaning this quote unquote benevolent faction, because we would not give up our nuclear arms, according to this lore, according to this story revolving around Eisenhower. We wouldn't give up our, they wanted us to get rid of our nuclear arms before they would openly interface with us, because we were too barbarian. We were too savage still. But they warned us not to interact with the grays. So there you have the beginning of the scenario that I'm laying out. So now you have the grays just taking over, and we are going to be in need of a savior. And I believe that that is the great deception, not the gray aliens in the abduction program, but the ones who show up to deliver us from the alien threat. That's the deception, because that person, there's going to be a leader among them, in my estimation. And that person is the very person that the Bible calls the man of sin, the son of perdition. And Apollo. And I believe that his name, in my opinion, will be Apollo, and that he will be presented to the earth as Apollo. Do you guys remember what Apollo looked like? Fair skin, blonde hair, blue eyes, golden hair. And he represented, by the way, the golden age. Mm-hmm. But Apollo was
the sun god.
So you have these beings that show up. And are those beings going to be themselves the dragon and his angels? I would say possibly, but I would refine that, and I would say it's more likely that they're going to be the hybrid offspring of the dragon and his angels, and they're going to be the proof of concept of what humanity can become if we take the genetic marks, or the genetic mark of Apollo, the genetic trademarks of that race. And who is that race? They are the offspring of the dragon and his angels and human women. They are effectively Nephilim. And so they're going to be the proof of concept. You can become like us. And of course, they're going to deliver us from the grace. And the contrast would be very remarkable. It'd be a very stark contrast between the grays and the insectolins, these extremely exotic alien beings, and our saviors who are showing up looking like, literally looking like the Greek gods, right? Showing up in saucers, in their craft, to deliver us from the alien threat. Now, our government is wrestling with the grays. That's most of what's going on. the grays, I think, constitute most of what's going on behind the scenes with the military. But I believe, and I have, this is just a shot in the dark, this is just rank speculation on my part, but I believe that the Vatican may be interfacing with the other guys.
I would agree with that. I mean, we talked about that before, Mount Graham and all baptize aliens. I mean, all right. The hints are
or
there.
Or they'll baptize us, don't forget.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Hey, baptism of fire is what I would say.
Let me throw this in there and get you guys' comment on it. All right, so for one thing, every time you say hybrids, it reminds me of something. When you mix a donkey and a horse, you get a mule. Well, the mule can't breed. They're effectively sterile. Do you think the hybrids are sterile? Which is why when, like the prophecy in Daniel, their seed cannot cleave with ours, right? We can't mingle because of that. Or the other one is the guy's name Galvian Thor? Is that it?
Valiant Thor?
Yeah. Yeah.
Valiant Thor.
Yeah. So we had this visitor from Uranus. Okay. Some people.
Venus. Mistake,
was it Venus? Okay. Yeah. And the guy spoke 40 languages. He was, at one point in time, met with our Congress.
Allegedly,
right?
There's pictures. Allegedly, there's pictures of him online, and he looks like Jimmy Stewart, the actor. And by the way, you're missing one very important detail: 6 fingers.
Yeah,
Valiant Thor and his consort had 6 fingers, according to the legend, right? And this, and by the way, this legend of Valiant Thor is old. It's not like hundreds of years old, but it comes from the beginning of UFO lore. It goes way back.
I think it's like 50s, isn't it?
50s and 60s. It goes way back. This is not somebody listening to Steve Quayle and then creating this myth about Valiant Thor having 6 fingers. This predates any of us or you guys out there or Tom Horn or Steve. It predates that. And so the fact that this dude, one of the identifiers of this of these beings, is that they had 6 fingers, I find very intriguing. But allegedly, they came from Venus and they were here. They say that there's a habitation in an underground habitation in Venus. So in other words, they're inhabiting the interior of the planet. And I don't know if any of this is true, but this is the lore. And there's pictures, allegedly pictures of them on the internet of Thor and his female consort and Phil Schneider.
Would you say they fit that Nordic profile?
No, actually, I believe the woman did, but Valiant Thor appears to, like I said, he looks very much like the actor Jimmy Stewart. So when you think of Valiant Thor, think about Jimmy Stewart with 6 fingers. That's what he looks like. He looked like a normal American citizen.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of weird stuff out there. Now, this is very – you know what I find interesting, too, talking about this UFO lore? I find the older stuff to be a lot more credible than the new stuff. I don't know if you guys get that sense as well, but I find this stuff pre-internet days when it was guys talking on the radio, when it was guys like Phil Schneider traveling around the country, going to these prepper expos and talking about these things and L. Bielek and all of those guys and Colonel Corso, the old school guys, I find to be very credible. Bob Lazar, and George Knapp, all the old school guys seem very credible, highly credible to me. And it's from that school of thought, not to say that George Knapp ever believed in Valiant Thor. I have no idea if he does or doesn't, but Phil Schneider certainly talked about him. And I believe also that, what's his name? He wrote the book, Behold a Pale Horse. His name escapes me right now. But anyway, some of these old school guys would mention Valiant Thor, and I've never seen what I would consider to be a robust and sufficiently thorough debunking of that story of Valiant Thor. to my knowledge, there doesn't exist. There is no debunking of that story. Now, that's not to say that it's proven, and I don't think it's proven by any means, but you would think that something so outlandish would be easy to just absolutely demolish, right? But to my knowledge, it's still a big mystery. I mean, you know, Phil Schneider used to show pictures of these people, of Thor and his consort, and would, I believe he even said that his father, who was a U-boat captain, a Nazi U-boat captain, was brought over in paperclip, that his father interfaced with them, and that they were trying to, according to the legends, they were trying to work with the government, but I think they got frustrated and they left or something like that. I think that's the story. But how interesting that they were depicted as having, or described as having, six fingers. That's very interesting to me.
Well, while you say that, I'm searching the National Archives and trying to look
at Valiant Thor.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we laugh, but if you put in, you know, UFO in the National Archives, buddy, you're going to come up with some crazy stuff, and stuff that we really don't have very many explanations for. But the Aquiline Project does come up in that. There's a bunch of things that come up in this. But yeah, I'm searching it, and I'm not finding anything. It doesn't mean that it's not, you know, hidden. But you know,
well, if you type in Valiant Thor, you're going to get exactly the individual I'm talking about. He looks like Jimmy Stewart. He has a resemblance to the Jimmy Stewart, the actor.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pictures. There's more than a handful of pictures of this particular guy. Again, I'm not saying that I'm not qualifying this as established fact. This is in the realm of question mark for me. I have no idea if Valiant Thor was real, but it is extremely intriguing to me, especially that so many pictures of this guy exist, and that there's some of these old school guys were talking about him. In fact, you know, Valiant Thor, his female consort, by the way, is Aryan in appearance. She is blonde-haired, fair-skinned.
I have a picture pulled up. She looks weird. Her face is kind of bulbous.
You want to show it and I'll display it?
Yeah, if you share a screen, I'll go ahead and show you.
Well, are you pulling up the one? There's one. She's in a lot of pictures with him where she's sitting next to him. Or there's another gentleman, too, that's part of this consort.
Yeah, there's three of them all together.
Yes. And then the woman is blonde haired, assumedly clear eyed. You can't really tell in the pictures. These are the pictures. Again, you know, for those listening, I don't know if this guy is just some known figure who worked in government, or if in fact we're looking at some sort of an extraterrestrial being.
Well, I'm trying to get this to come up here,
The story of Valiant Thor didn't come out until 67, but he had supposedly been around in the 50s.
Yeah, that's right.
But like you say, though, there's really nothing that says that him and his companions from Venus were debunked or denied. I find that, I like you pointed out, I find that to be more interesting than the UAP thing now.
Well, yeah, I mean, it always struck me as strange. You would think that this would be so easy to just absolutely debunk, you know, with just finding who this person actually is, or finding reference to this person or whatever. But to my knowledge, no one has ever debunked the Valiant Thor story. Now, again, that does not qualify it as fact. It just puts a big old question mark over it. That
I'm having trouble with screen share, Doug. Can you get it up here? I've got. It says it's operational, but it doesn't look right.
It says that
somebody's screen is being shared. I can see.
That's mine.
Yeah, just exit out of yours, Dave. It says that you haven't given me permission to share the screen.
Yeah, and it's not allowing me to do that because there's two settings. One, it's for you, and two, it's for your guest. And it's not giving me the permission for the guest.
That's fine. I'll put in a picture of
okay.
Valiant Thor. You just edit it in. There's actually notes. And again, what's so intriguing about this is there's more than a few pictures these three individuals.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to look this up, just type in VAL Val, V-A-L-I-A-N, Thor. Val, Valiant, Thor.
Or Valiant Thor.
Yeah, with
like,
a T on
like
it.
Brave, Valiant Thor. You'll get all kinds of pictures.
Yeah. And he had some sort of a speech that he gave to Congress about how to like save the world and all this stuff. But you know, it shocks me that we have a visitation, you know, in the 1950s. Here's what I find to be interesting, and maybe you can shine.
Doug, let me interrupt you. If you want to try to bring that up now, it should work.
Okay.
With the glitches have been out today. I heard he didn't speak to Congress. I heard it was closed door with executive officials.
Well. It was to the Pentagon.
Yes.
Yeah. Here we go.
Okay. So here's probably one of all the different pictures you can see of him.
He does look like Jimmy Stewart. You're right.
Yeah.
The woman looks like she should be Ravensbrook. I mean, she looks very...
She's very striking.
Nazi-Aryan, yeah.
Yeah. They're handsome people. Now, again, you would think that somebody would have been able to say, oh, no, that's this person. You know, because he's being pictured in government settings here.
Yeah, exactly.
And, again, maybe that's happened. But to my knowledge, and I look in at every now and again, I pull up the search engine and see if I can find a debunking of Valiant Thor. And maybe there's been one done recently, but not to my knowledge.
Yeah, I would love to hear someone like Tucker Carlson bring that up.
He won't.
There's nothing you can hold on to. There's nothing. There's no substance there. You just have the testimony of Phil Schneider, who talks a great deal about Valiant Thor. I believe the late L. Bielek. Dave, are you familiar with L. Bielek?
Very familiar, yeah. He used to do a series of shows with Art Bell.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And he was very, very good friends with Phil Schneider. And tells a lot of stories about Phil Schneider, and Phil tells stories about L. Now, there were things about L's stories that sometimes were just so far out there. I mean, he was allegedly part of the Montauk Project.
Yeah, Philadelphia Experiment.
The Philadelphia Experiment. But he struck me as a very sincere guy. So all of these old timers, these old school guys, this was before talking about UFOs was cool. This was when talking about UFOs was a surefire way for everybody to think you're nuts. You know, this was back before the internet.
And, well, Art Bell really normalized a lot of that.
He did.
Yeah.
What do you think about the current state of affairs with cattle mutilation? There's been some new stories popped up of cattle mutilation. And you and I have talked about this mainly because I had a cattle mutilation on my back acreage. And being someone that was previously a law enforcement professional, you know, your testimony has to be impeccable. If you're found to be a liar, then you're giglioed and you are yanked out the force. And so, you know, for me, what happened, it just is what it is. It was a cow, you know, sexual organs have been removed. The ear had been removed, everything. I had a carcass evaluation done. I didn't have a toxicology done. But I did have a carcass evaluation done by a veterinarian, and the body had been exsanguinated and all that stuff. You know, the typical case. And now we just have, I think it was another 40 cattle in Colorado that had experiences of a cattle mutilation. And so do you have a good answer or a good guess as to why the cattle mutilation thing is still going on?
Is it possible that they're extracting some sort of natural resource from the cattle that they need?
Yeah, I think
I mean, there could be a very prosaic answer to this. You know, maybe they use parts of the cattle to process food for themselves, nutrients for themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't just take cattle, by the way. They also suck water up into the craft.
That's right. That's right.
And they've been seen taking other things as well. Sometimes people see the grays get out of the craft and go into a field and do something, go gather something and come back. So these are biological creatures, and they have to sustain themselves. They need nutrients, and you know, their technology needs fuel and whatever it uses. I mean, whatever they use to maintenance their technology. So I would ascribe the cattle mutilations to they're harvesting something that may be related to their nutrients.
Well, I think there's a breeding program for the cattle. If there's a breeding program for the people to create hybrids, how are you going to feed them?
Well, the cattle are put back dead. I mean, the cattle are returned to the point of abduction, but they're dead, and
there's a lot of accounts where they hit a cow and they took the calf that hadn't been born yet.
Sure. Maybe they got their own cattle operation going, and they're harvesting specimens of the highest genetic stock. I don't know.
I was speaking with someone on this many, many years ago, and this is after the Phoenix Lights. And this person was a biologist. And what they said is, interesting thing about the cattle mutilations is that cattle's DNA and some of the functions of their autonomic nervous system is very similar to humans. So I'm wondering if this is not part of the hybridization program where they're going to mix in a third element.
It very well could be. They could be harvesting genetic material for some other purpose. I mean, you know, or it could be all the above, by the way. It could be they're harvesting genetic material and they're using the flesh for their nutrients.
Yeah,
their
why the anus? Why the organs? Why the brain? I mean, they excise things with precision and just throw the carcass back.
They take the blood.
Yeah, that's true.
And sometimes I think they take the eyeball or one eyeball. Or, mm-hmm. It does seem very scientific. It seems like there's something about each one of these organs that is important to their breeding program. That's the sense I get. But also, go ahead.
If we look at this from, let's say, a law enforcement perspective, which is very much taboo, every one of these is a crime scene, and there is a similarity to every single crime scene. The cows are taken and then put back. Typically, the body is dropped or damaged. There is an organ or two organs or more missing, and then the tails are missing. The skin is peeled back or burnt somehow. The ear is missing. The eyeball is missing. So if we look at Jack the Ripper cases, you know, you can see the telltale similarities in between what all 6 to 8 victims that are there. But when you have hundreds of victims of all similar case, and then law enforcement as a whole goes, it's predatory. Well, it's not. It's not predatory. At this point in time, we have methods of behavior. We have patterns of behavior, and we have methodologies of how things are being picked up, put down, cut apart. Exsanguinated animals don't do that. Animals, you know, will bite and bleed you out, but not exsanguinate you. And when I did my own investigation on this carcass that was here on our homestead, no abrasions, no puncture wounds, no gunshot wounds, no lacerations. And this is a 700-pound steer. Good luck petting it, for one thing, and good luck pinning it to the ground if it's a person trying to do it. Now, once again, we didn't get a toxicology, so I don't know if it was tranquilized, but my family was outside in the pasture when it happened. They walked away, and within minutes came back, things on the ground. That's not how, you know, things normally work.
Let me broaden the field here for a second. Tim, is there any evidence that we see these mutilations of humans in the form that they do cattle?
You know, I've seen disparate accounts here and there over the years I've been studying the phenomenon, the abduction phenomenon. But in generally speaking, no. Generally speaking, they do not treat human beings like cattle, thankfully. They may treat us like cattle in other senses, but in terms of what they do to our livestock and then leaving this emaciated body lying there without blood and so forth, No, that is, if there are cases, they're extremely uncommon. The common procedure is they put you back as close as to how they took you that they can, except for you might have a little hybrid baby grown in your womb when they put you back, but that's all covert. I mean, they don't want you to know. As soon as you start to show, they take it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. I've heard that a number of times. Well, we've gone well over our time limit, but this has been so fascinating. It's hard to know where to end it. Tim, I hope we can do a part two. Doug and I are going to review and we'll formulate a starting point with new territory to go into. But, you know, one of the things I just wanted to say before we close, I agree with you, Tim. There's a disagreement in the intelligence community on how much to reveal. And they reveal too much. Oh, we got to pull back. But that's also the breeding ground for leakers. And I think we need to be aware of things being leaked out through third-party sources.
Very good point. Very good point.
Yeah, I got nothing to add. You know, I wish we had this conversation every day. And the government,
this is fantastic.
The government's lying to us. They're not telling us the truth. And whatever truth the government tells you has been approved by the governmental lawyers, and it's not the whole truth.
Yeah. Everything but the truth. I agree. Yep. Gentlemen, this has been fascinating, and I'm sure our audience will agree. We're kind of left with a question mark, but I think we've helped take the audience steps closer to really contemplating what's true and what's not true. At least they're in a decision where they can start to evaluate. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to see more and more revelations come forth. I think some will be disinfo, like I said before, and I think some of it will be leaked info. Gentlemen, this has been good. This is Dave Hodges for my partner, Doug Thornton, and our guest, Tim Alberino. I want to thank all of you for joining us. Come back for more. We just don't do geopolitics here, although this could be the ultimate geopolitical event if you look at it that way. But thanks a lot. We'll see you back here next time. God bless.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, guys.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.